Hey guys, this is Sophia, and you're listening to our October episode of Pen and Page Gals. In preparation of season 3, we have launched a new format of our podcast, so you'll notice those changes and tweaks as you listen this month. In this episode, we have a Halloween theme, so we'll be doing a little bit of discussion around costumes and Halloween and our thoughts on the holiday. We also talk about our book club pick this month, which was the Caribou Trilogy by Stephanie Garber, and we have a fun new segment that we've included starting this month called Am I the Antagonist? That will come at the end of this episode. Enjoy!
Welcome to Pen and Page Gals, the podcast where we're flipping through our favorite and recent reads. Your hosts are me, I'm Jensine.
And I'm Sophia. And in a digital age when everything is fast-paced and fighting for our attention, we hope to inspire you to slow the scroll and pause for some pages instead.
Hi everyone, welcome to our October episode of Pen and Page Gals. I'm here with my co-host Sophia.
Hello.
And I'm Jensine. And we have lots of stuff for you today.
All
we're going to go on a trip. Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to go on our own little Pen and Page Gals Oktoberfest adventure.
Oh, I love it.
Even though Sophia and I are probably the least Halloween spirited people you will meet.
Ever.
So today on this episode, we are kind of commemorating the end of season 2 of Pen and Page Gals.
Woo!
Which is super exciting. I think because this season get so busy with like back to school and then all of a sudden it's the holidays. We're like, I can't believe we started a podcast at this time. And then so every time it comes up in the year, we're like, oh shoot, we've done another year. We've done another season.
Totally.
So to commemorate and to kind of kick off a new season and new stuff for you guys, we have come up with different sections of the podcast that you can connect with and jump to when you're listening or re-listening, and hopefully if you've read our book club pick with us, you can join in that too. So to kick off our episodes, we're gonna have our bookmate banter. Woo-hoo! Which is kind of similar to what we have done in the past, where we just kind of girl mom chat about what's going on in our lives. And so like I was saying, it's Halloween season, but Halloween, we don't know her, right, Sophia?
Who is she? I go from my birthday in mid-September straight to Christmas, okay? Like Thanksgiving gets a little bit of an honorary mention, but it's straight to Christmas for me. I don't even know Halloween what, like,
you don't have cobwebs and witch hats hanging from your porch.
Heck to the no. Like, here's what
no orange in your house.
No orange in my house. I do have one small white pumpkin on my fireplace mantle. I did not buy it though. It came in this birthday floral arrangement that was sent to me.
Yeah.
And I think because it's fall, like they included like a white gourd. And I was like, oh, this is cute. So I have that on my mantle, but that's literally it. And here's the thing about Halloween decorations. Like, okay, first of all, if that's your thing and that brings your heart joy, no shade.
You do you, boo. You're still welcome here.
You're still welcome here. But I'm just saying, why would I want to make my house look like it's haunted? Like it's falling apart and decrepit. Why would I want that to be the case? Like, I don't want cobwebs in my house. So why would I add fake ones? That doesn't make any sense to me. So no Halloween decorations here. We do carve pumpkins every October, but the deal is we go to the pumpkin patch the Saturday before Halloween every year. So if Halloween happens to fall on a Friday, then that means we've gone to the pumpkin patch the week before. This year, Halloween is falling on a Sunday. So we are literally going to the pumpkin patch the day before.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
it's just, I think it's just easy for me to remember, like, every year, like, that's the day that we're going to go, the last Saturday before Halloween. Yeah. And then the day that we go to the pumpkin patch is the day that we carve our pumpkins. So I'm not carving pumpkins to set them out and make them look cute for all of October. Yeah.
It's just for the kids.
It's purely for the kids. And I think I subconsciously do it as close to Halloween as possible so that the moment Halloween is over, I can toss those babies done. And be like, it's yeah, not Halloween that's, anymore.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as pumpkins are available at Trader Joe's, like, you know, they put them out in the huge bins, like in yes. the parking lot. Like, I have yeah. to get one or my kids will like not stop screaming. Aww. So I indulge them in the, you know, the baby. Also, they yeah. have the cute, like, baby white ones.
Yes,
I got,
those are
like,
cute.
A pretty, it's, like, pinkish, you know? It's got, it's kind of like a peachy, yeah, it's
Did you
pretty.
Say pink pumpkin?
Yeah.
That is, like.
It's, like, this, I'll show you a picture. It's, like, the prettiest blush peach color. So, I got it.
Interesting. Okay, Halloween.
And it's not huge. It's, like, but it's not the mini ones. I would say. Kind of the size of, like, you know, a cereal bowl.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. But
Wait,
it's
that's
cute.
So cute.
I know. So is I it, got one of those.
Is it organically that color? Or
I
has
have
it been,
no
like,
idea. You know how they have those, like, those fairy tale
oh,
pumpkins
uh-huh.
that are, like,
yeah.
minty and, yeah. yeah.
Oh,
it's
yes.
It's, like, part of that family, I think.
Oh,
whatever
boy.
That is.
No,
they have
you
a Trader
what?
Joe's if you want
I
to.
Don't want to get into Halloween because it's just, like...
It's for fall. It's for fall.
I like being anti-Halloween. I
yeah.
too much
yeah.
on my, like, because knowing myself, if I start enjoying it and getting into it, like, it will be.
You're going to go full.
It'll be insane. So I just rather not. But that
yeah.
is adorable. That sounds
yeah.
gorgeous.
And then my kids, they get pumpkins from their school. Like, their school
oh,
always does, like, a little thing, and they get
yeah.
to bring a pumpkin home. So we've always had at least one or two pumpkins. And then, you know, they rot, and then I throw them away, and that's the
Oh, my
end
gosh.
Of it.
I forget if I've told this story on this podcast before because, again, we're approaching season 3. So it's not our first time talking about pumpkins and Halloween on the podcast. But there was – one year when I was before kids, actually even before marriage, I used to teach
oh.
at a preschool.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And there was like an object lesson or like some sort of like gospel. It was a Christian preschool. So there was like some Halloween story that had a gospel twist to it about a jack-o'-lantern or a pumpkin or something. Anyways, I had been asked to demonstrate or perform. I don't know if that's the right word. Like give this story to
story
the,
time
to the
with
kids,
Sophia.
Right? Yes,
the,
story time with Sophia.
The origins.
The origins. Anyway, so I remember thinking it would be cute to bring a real pumpkin as like my prop for this day. And
yeah.
okay, I'm like 21, 22. I don't know anything about carving pumpkins. Like I don't have kids, right? So I'm thinking, okay, I want to be super prepared and like have this ready to go. So I'm not stressed out about it on the day that I have to go to school and do it. So I remember I went to the pumpkin. I think I went to the grocery store, actually. I got a pumpkin. I spent all this time, you know, what's the word? Like de-seeding
yeah.
it? What's the word? Like
oh,
taking
yeah.
the stuff out.
Know.
You know, like cleaning
out.
It out. Yeah. Carving it, making sure it looked all cool when you lit it up with a candle inside. Okay, I did all this stuff. And then I think I had like a week. It was like a week before I
oh,
had to
no.
bring it to work, right? And I was like, oh, I'm going to be so cute. I lived in an apartment complex, right? Again, like single in my very early 20s. And I remember I was like, I'm going to be so cute and decorate my apartment with this pumpkin that I carved for work. And I put it out on our like little apartment front step and had it out there all week. And the day before, so like, let's say I had to bring it to work on a Friday, Thursday, I get home from work and the thing has melted. Like it
yeah,
was, it had
yeah,
been rotting,
like,
I think. And I
yeah,
didn't realize
yeah.
it.
And it just collapses in on itself. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And I was panicking because that is exactly what I had tried to avoid by planning ahead and having it carved ahead because I didn't want to be stressed about it. And here I was like super stressed about it. Anyways, so I always think about that. This is probably why also
the origin of, yes, your anti-Halloween-ness. Yeah. But we're into the origin stories today.
Origin stories all the way, every day.
So are your kids into Halloween then?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they are. They love dressing up. Yeah. They love trick-or-treating. And I love taking them trick-or-treating. Like, I'm not a total, you know, no Halloween. I think it's really cute to see them enjoy that and go door-to-door and just the excitement in the air. So they love doing that. And then again, because for me, it's just like a checklist item. Like, I'm not reveling in the spirit of Halloween. Like, I swear after my birthday, like end of September, I'm always like, tell me what you want for your Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
You have 1 week to think about it and change your mind as many times as you want in that week. But by this day, when you tell me that this is what you want, that is what you're going to be wearing. Cause I'm ordering the costumes and I'm not thinking about it again until October 31st. So they do love Halloween. Darren, my son, he's in second grade. He has asked me a couple times, like, why we don't decorate our house. And I usually don't dress up either. Like, and he's like, why don't you wear a costume? And I'm just like, listen, buddy.
Oh my gosh. Sophia, you in a costume. The year you are in a costume. That's the real year the world changes.
I'm wearing a costume this year, Jensi. Okay, actually, it's not a real cost. So because he loves Halloween so much and he's been asked like every year since he could talk, like, what are you going to be for Halloween? Like, how come you're not dressing up? And so I didn't buy a costume, but I have a blue and white check gingham dress that looks a little bit like Dorothy.
Yeah.
I already have it. I didn't buy it like thinking about Halloween. I just already have it. And I thought, okay, I can put this on and just say that I'm Dorothy and Kylo, our dog, can be my Toto. So, and I have a picnic basket. It's like all stuff I have, right? So
Yeah. So cute.
I will be wearing
a costume. Are you going to do like pigtails?
Yeah. James and I did talk about like before I like settled on that. He was like, should we dress up? Like, do like,
he has to,
cause we know.
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, so he, like, we both know, like, our son loves Halloween and like wants to dress up. And so we've kind of said like, okay, like, should we dress up? And no, he's not matching me, but we had just finished watching Squid Games, and he was like, dude, we should be Squid Games. But
yeah. Every dad is gonna be Squid Games for Halloween.
Know.
You know what? My husband also wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm good.
It's an easy costume.
It is.
I don't want to buy anything for it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
anyways, well, that's exciting.
Yeah, I think I haven't told our son that I'm dressing up, so I think he'll be excited to see it. But yeah, do your kids want you to dress up? Do they express
My son also really loves Halloween, like he always has since he was little. I think also because October is his birthday month. So he is just, October is his favorite month. So yeah, he's always dressed up. He requested to be Poe Dameron, Star Wars pilot. Poe Dameron.
I have no idea.
Darren also has this costume, if you didn't know that.
What?
Or he has a helmet, he said.
Oh my gosh. Is that the guy that like talks to BB-8?
Yes.
Or like he's the pilot in the orange suit,
you know?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. I said, I don't know his name. But.
Yeah, but my son is very into Star Wars, so he requested that for his costume, and I haven't bought him a new costume for like years. Like, he's been wearing the same like couple. Yeah. Like, he had maybe two or three on repeat like the last few years.
So
he's that, and then my daughter is in her Frozen stage now. She's like come of age into her first old, like yes. Disney movie, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah. she's all about the Frozen. So she has, thanks to Sophia, a lot yeah. of Disney princess dresses.
I'm like, listen, you want these dress ups? Take them. Get rid of them for me.
So yeah, so she's you know, funny thing though is she's not a big Elsa gal.
She likes Anna.
She loves Anna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she's what, like though?
The little like, sister.
No, but that too. But like the story really is like Anna is story. The protagonist yes. of the she story, is. Right?
I agree.
Yeah. Yes. So.
Yeah. So.
I can see that.
She's going to be Anna. That.
Oh, and so sweet.
Yeah. I have thought about what I'm going to be. I don't know.
You we'll don't know. See. It's not too late to be Squid Games.
I know. It's just a tracksuit.
And attach it a number is. To yourself.
It really is. But yes, I have dressed up with my kids once before.
Oh my gosh. We did the Minions. Year. Yes, the year you yes. guys did Minions and Sam was Gru was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah,
yeah. Genius. That was yes. perfection. So
I
good.
I had just had Nora too. So she was like 3 months old Minion and it was
yeah.
pretty cute.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was yeah. perfect. And like, I'm sure it's stuff that he had, like the scarf and the peacoat. But yes, when I yeah, saw I didn't the buy picture, him anything. I was like, yeah, it was perfect, though. It matched perfectly. That was a really cute costume that you guys that did.
I don't know. Maybe we'll join in on the Star Wars theme. I think that would
be fun. Yeah. Your son would love that. Yeah. Enjoy the years of like, just like the sweet, like I want to dress up as a Star Wars. Like I remember when you're, Darren wanted to be like Lego Ninjago. He wanted to be yeah, one yeah, of the yeah. Lego Ninjago. It's like very cute. This was the first year where I asked him, what do you want to be? And he told me he wanted to be a zombie. Yeah. And, you know, it's like that kind of like older, like
yeah,
scary, you know? Yeah. And so I kind of was like, a zombie, huh? Like what? I didn't know how to feel about it because, you know, like I love Jesus. And so I'm like, do I let you dress up like a zombie? That's a creature of the dead. Like, I don't know. But I was talking to my husband about it and he kind of was like, all boys go through this phase. Yeah. And the more you resist it and make a fuss about it, it's just going to create like this thing in him. Like, just let him dress up as a zombie. Don't make it a big deal. And he'll get over it real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a boy, so I trust his take on that. But it was funny. So for that costume, I didn't, you know, my daughter's like, my oldest wants to be Tinkerbell and then my 4-year-old yeah. wants to be Belle. So yeah. I bought like their princess costumes. But for the zombie, I was like, do I like buy this online or, you know? So James was like, no, like I'll take him to Spirit Halloween. Like that's kind of a costume that you want to go and like see.
Yeah.
And,
you know, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So he took him and all he came back with was like this really grotesque looking mask. Like, so he's going to wear his normal clothes and just put on this nasty mask. And I was kind of like, okay, like your dad says like to like not, you know, like not make a big fuss about it and just go with it. So I'm just going with it, but I really don't know how I feel about this. And then last week I got an email. It was like the standard like weekly update email from my kids' elementary school. And they were saying, so because of COVID this year, like our Halloween parade at school, we still will not be allowing parents on campus, but we'll take lots of photos and videos and there still will be a parade. It'll just be for like within the school, like the other grades can see. And then she was like, and you know, they will have to wear a mask like during the parade, like a face mask, not a Halloween mask. And then she said, and because of that, we're not allowing any costumes that require a mask as part of their costume.
Yeah.
I mean, they can wear the costume, but they can't wear the mask part because they'll have to wear a facial mask.
Yeah.
And I just was like, but his whole costume is literally just a mask. So I told him over the weekend, I said, okay, listen, this is what the school's saying. So you're just going to have to kind of like what you were doing with Enoch, just pick a costume that you have. And that's the costume you wear to school for your parade. And then when we trick or treat, you can wear your scary zombie mask that I freaking hate and don't ever want to see again. So
will your girls be scared of his costume?
So think? when So when James took him, he sent me a photo from the store. Like, this is what he picked. And I was like, ew, like, no, I don't like that. But fine, whatever. And I said, I was like, don't let him scare his sisters with that. Like, I don't want to see him wearing it in the house and like freaking them out. Like, that's not okay with us, or that's not okay with me. Like, that's like my one caveat for, you know, don't make a big fuss about this. Okay. Yeah. But then you can't be like a twat about it. Right. He told Darren that he was like, okay, like, I don't want to see you scaring your sisters. Like, this is purely just your Halloween costume, whatever. And he, you know, Darren's like a really sweet older brother. Like, he really is. Yes. Yeah. So he totally understood. But the funny thing is, he came home and his little sister was like, what did you get? Like, what is that? And so he showed it to her and she thought it was hilarious. She was wearing it all. She's four. Okay.
Oh,
wearing it all around the house. I was like, take that off.
She is going to be Halloween queen growing
up. No. She's older. So, oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't think they're scared. And I'm not even just scared. I'm just like, that's distasteful to me. Like, I don't want to see that. I'm such a Halloween snob. But anyways, that's our plan for
Well, I think we've reached our Halloween quota for today.
Right?
We're good.
Let's move on. Yeah, let's move on.
We have a whole weekend that we have to do Halloween with our families next weekend. So that was our bookmate banter for October. That was fun. That was lively and spirited.
I loved it. It was great. It was great. We are moving on to the second segment or section of our podcast now, which will, again, this will should all feel familiar if you've been listening to our podcast. We're just kind of streamlining things, but we are entering into what was formerly kind of called just the book club discussion part. But we have named it Page Turner or Page Burner. And it's basically just our book club pick for the month, talking about it, our thoughts, how we felt. You know, is it a page turner or do we want to burn this book and get rid of it?
Because so if it doesn't make the cut, it's out of here.
It's out of here. Yes.
It's not a reread.
On the shelf. Well, so if you missed it, the book club pick for this month was the entire Caraval trilogy by Stephanie Garber. And that included Caraval, Legendary, and then Finale, which was book three. Yeah. And we thought it'd be best, because it is a series, to kind of just go through each book quickly. And then maybe after talking about each individual book, just like the series as a whole. So let's start with book one, Caraval.
Caraval.
Let's just give it to me straight on. Was book one, just book one, a page turner or a page burner for you?
Man, that is a good question. It's hard to, I mean, now that we've read all three, it's hard to just distinguish it on its own. Because on its own, it's like right in the middle for me. I don't know if I would have like chucked it and given up on the series altogether. Because I think it did have some redeeming parts. Like, it's told from Scarlett's point of view. She's one of the two main sisters, Scarlett and Donatella. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the author Stephanie Garber starts with her first, because I think we would agree she's kind of, or at least she starts off as kind of the weaker sister.
Totally.
Very safe, very plays within the lines, very like risk averse. And so, but then, you know, you're introduced to the world of Caraval and you're introduced to the characters of Legend and, you know, the boy she meets, Julian. Mm-hmm. And I was really wrapped up in the middle of the book. I really enjoy being in the games.
Yeah.
But I think the middle was really nice and juicy for me, but the beginning and end were kind of dry and I was kind of confused. But
oh my gosh. You
know, in itself it was like good and bad. So I don't know if I would say either it was a big page turner or a burner. Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of had the same conclusion as you, but like for flipped reasons. So same for me, it's kind of like it it falls a little too flat to be a page turner, but it's compelling enough that I wouldn't just give up on it after book one.
Yes.
So same as you, I feel like I can't conclusively say it's a page turner or a page burner. And I was also really confused part of the book, but I was confused like the first 2/3 of the book. So I was confused for the majority of the book as I was reading it. I was like, what am I reading? Like, you know, you just said like you felt like you really enjoyed reading about the games and stuff. I think if I reread it, because I know now like what's going on, I could enjoy it. But for me, as I was reading it first time through, I got the sense that I should be enjoying the games. Like, this is clever. This is sexy. This is different. But I didn't. I was just confused the whole time. Yeah. Until the really the climax of the story where she, you know, the last night is it. And then she like figures out that like the last clue is she has to like Julian gets killed in front of her. I forget the exact details, but like as all that is happening, until that point, I was just really confused. And I agree that I don't think that Scarlet is the typical protagonist that we would see in a YA novel, right? Yes. Like when I am reading YA, I want Feyre energy. I want Selena, you know, energy. I want, you know, I like that strong, like bad ass. I'm sorry. Like, you know, like that kind of like.
I know. In my head, I was like, just say the word.
Like, but like, I want that kind of heroine energy, right? And I just felt like Scarlet for the first, like the first 2/3, the good chunk of the book was really whiny. Like the whole thing, she was like, I need to find my sister. And I was just like, shut up and play the game. Like, you know, it was kind of hard for me to root for her in the beginning. But I will say for me, you said the ending felt dry for you. But for me, the ending is what really made the book satisfactory and what made it feel like, okay, I can say that this is not like, you know, a definite page burner, because the ending redeemed it for me. And the ending actually really made me want to read book two. So I know you took like a little bit of a break in between book one and book two. And I was just like, no, I need to know what happens. Like, I want to see Tella's part of the story. So the ending really redeemed it for me. I don't typically like cliffhangers in books, but I felt like Scarlet's storyline in book one was wrapped up enough.
It was like the end of the game. And then you could kind of move
that
on.
It was okay. Yeah, so it was okay for me. Whereas normally I'd be like, oh, heck no. I'd be so annoyed that the author did that. But and I think, you know what? The reason why I think I felt confused was, this might be just like an occupational hazard, so to speak, of reading so many books and running this podcast with you, is when I'm reading a book, I very rarely read a book and feel like I have no idea what's going on and where this is going. I tend to be the type of reader that as I'm reading, I kind of sense where the story's going. And then I enjoy watching my hunches come true, or even if they're not completely accurate, like kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of have a feeling of how it's going to go. And that's kind of what makes reading fun for me. And I think the reason why the first part of the book felt difficult for me to get through was I could tell right off the bat that Julian was not who he said he was. I didn't know who he was, but I was like, this is not just some random, I mean, the author points to it so many times where it's like, he tried to say something, but he stopped himself.
It was like,
it just was like really obvious. And so I think I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, like, okay, like reveal it already. Yeah, and it just felt like she dragged that on. So that was really annoying for me. And then I don't think, I don't know. For me, I think the author didn't do as great of a job explaining really in the beginning half of the book what exactly Caraville was and what we could expect going into it. She dropped little things about like, it's a game and like people get swept
and
away
it's magic.
Into it. It's magic. It's not everything, like everything you see isn't real. But I just felt confused. I was like, I don't get it. Kind of, you know what it kind of reminded me of was Have you ever read The Phantom Toll Booth? It's like a children's
book. Oh, yeah, like a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And that book has like, it's like similar riddles where things mm-hmm. that people say are sometimes it's literal, but sometimes it's not literal. And
yeah,
that book, I actually ended up really, I remember reading it as a kid, like fifth grade, sixth grade, and rereading it many, many times, because the more I reread it, the more I enjoyed it, because I could kind of pick up on the little jokes and the little nuggets that the author had dropped. And I kind of feel like Caravelle reminded me of that, in the sense that if I were to reread Caravelle, I would probably enjoy it more because I know what's coming. I know what to look for. But as a first time read through, it was just confusing to me. I didn't really know what was going on. So it was okay. If it was just that book, I think I would be like, meh, I don't know if I can recommend
well,
it.
Well, yeah, I think if it was a standalone or whatever, if you chopped off the epilogue chapters to it where you find out how Tello was involved in the games and stuff, I think, it would have been a very meh, like, 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
But for me, I actually try not to think ahead, or I just don't. I just like being in the story and feeling out where it's going. So as the games were going on, I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. Like, oh, that's kind of exciting. Like, who is this Dante? And is Julian Legend, you know?
Yeah.
And then like all these things. And so I kind of got swept up in the games. But for me, I thought the author spent a lot of time setting everything up and explaining a lot about, the magic and what Caravelle was and, setting all these things up and how bad, their father was.
Yeah.
She spent a lot of pages on it, but then at the very end, I was so confused because I was like, wait, who's dead? Who's not dead? They're all actors. And then, and then it's like, boom, it's the party and it's all over. And I was like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
So I felt like the ending was just rushed for me. And I had to ask you, I was like, so. but it did all make sense. But I did get that same sense in book 2 and book 3 too at the very ending. Everything, it did wrap up really nicely. And after sitting on it, I'm like, okay, everything makes sense. Like,
yeah.
All the big plot twists and everything, they got resolved. Yeah. So I'm not like confused about what happened, but I would remember like turning the page to the next chapter and it's like, oh, that scene is over. Like there was no more like delving into it. And I was like, oh, okay, we're moving on. So I kind of felt just not totally satisfied, even though I understand what happened. I just, wish it maybe was fleshed out like 5 pages more, you know?
Yeah.
But
I agree. Is this the author's first book?
I think it felt like it. Or the first big one.
Yeah. If it wasn't, it felt like it to me. I kind of felt like, it almost felt like, do you remember when we read the Throne of Glass series?
And yeah, the first one.
By the end of the series, we're like, she's the queen.
But the first book, it's a little,
it's a little stilted. The flow isn't quite there. I agree with you as a whole, like the things that you're saying about this series as a whole. Yeah. Those were true for me too. Okay. Should we move on to Legendary Book 2?
Legendary. This is where it gets exciting.
Totally.
And you know what's interesting is, like, for me, I realize a lot of series usually start off with a bang. Like, the first book is, like all the series that I really am attracted to, I'm like, that first book, amazing. Yes. And then with each subsequent book, it kind of like declines until by book 3 or book 4, you're just reading it just to finish the story, But this one was cool in that it was like the inverse, where like the first book was definitely the weakest, but as you move along, it gets stronger and stronger.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool.
Yes, I agree. And I thoroughly enjoyed Legendary more than I did Caravelle. One, yeah, because I loved Tella's character.
Yes.
She definitely has more of that feisty spirit that we, yeah, I think, are accustomed to reading when we're reading YA books, especially fantasy books. And come on, enemies to lovers, like, that's our wheelhouse. Okay. Like,
were they really enemies though?
Well, I mean, she didn't want to love him. Okay. So like when Legendary starts, it's after that, the ball from the first Caravelle, like it's book two starts the day after the ball that ends the first Caravelle happens. And so, yeah, Tella wakes up, she's like slightly hungover. She's spent the night with Dante. We don't really know if that means she slept with him or she just kissed him. Like, we don't know, but she's like, yeah, been with Dante. And she's pissed about it. Like, she's like, she, like, he's beautiful, but I hate him. Like, he's such a, yeah, jerk. You know, like,
yeah.
This, so, I mean, are the enemies? I don't know. And then.
That's true. Because in, yeah, the games, he did play like.
Yeah.
The like villain. A sleaze to Scarlet, yeah, and stuff.
Yeah. Right. Right. And she, so true, Tella, true, hates him for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is true. I love, I don't know if you picked up on this, but the way, I really like her, Stephanie Garber's writing. I think she did, uh-huh, a pretty good job. Like, uh-huh, not, she did a really good job describing things like metaphors. I love that kind of stuff. But she also, yeah, was like good about just explaining things. But every, yeah, time she's talking about Dante / surprise Legend, she's like, he smelled like broken promises and bad ideas, yeah, you know, or he looked like magic and heartbreak.
Yeah.
They were so over the top, but I was totally here for them. I was like, yes, you're, yeah, speaking my language.
Yeah, for sure. But
I love,
for
that, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Julian and Scarlet, their love story, love line arc was great, but
yeah,
Dante and Tella are like spoon. Like, I was like,
fire, sparks. And I think because, you know, we're introduced to Jax, who's the Prince, yeah, of Hearts, and,
yes,
we're introduced to basically like the next level of things.
Yeah.
Like in book one, yeah, we're just in the world of Caravelle and that's it. But,
yeah,
book two builds, you know, enlarges the world. We're introduced to the Fates,
yeah,
which are kind of like the gods, and,
yeah,
and become the ultimate like enemy and what, right, they have to do to save the world. Yeah. So yeah, we're in, and I think Donatella and Legend's love story is made more interesting because we're introduced to Jax, who, yeah, is kind of the other side of the triangle, even though it's like a weird, yes, triangle.
No, for sure. No, for sure. It is a love triangle. Yeah. For sure it is. Yeah. I think this book was also more enjoyable because having gone through one Caravelle already, I sort of understood what the games were about, and it just, yeah, it made sense to me more where the plot was going. So I didn't feel as confused this book. So I liked that. And it's funny that you mentioned Stephanie Garber's writing, because actually, like, the one note that I have for what I disliked about this book was that I felt like the author repeated herself.
Yeah.
So many times to make sure it was really clear to the reader, but it was almost to the point where, like, okay, we get it. So for example,
yeah,
when Tella has to make the choice of like, I think it's in this book where she's saying like, Dante is Legend and Legend is Dante. And so that means that if I want, like, at the end, she's like, I need to save my mom. But to save my mom would mean that I need to give the cards to this,
yeah,
person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if I give the cards to this person, then that means Dante is doomed and like, he'll have no power. Yeah. And like, I, yeah, love him. And I'm like, I don't remember the exact specific.
Yeah, it's like every chapter. She had to make. Every, yeah, chapter, she has to like run through
the her whole internal thing again.
Options. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like nothing's, yeah, changed. It's the too. Same options. Yeah.
I was,
yeah, like, we get it. We get it. Okay. It's an impossible decision. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of just adds to why I was wondering if this was her first series, because I feel like experienced authors trust their readers to be a little bit more sophisticated and able to follow the story. But overall, I did like it more than I liked Caravelle Book One. And it definitely kept up with that exciting momentum for me that I felt at the end of book one, where I was like, oh my gosh, okay, like there's a cliffhanger, it's going to keep going. I felt like book two really carried that well. It's kind of like you said, the first book was the slowest, and then the momentum just kept picking up throughout book two, and then obviously culminating in book three, which was really nice. It was nice to kind of get through the hump of the first book, but then not be, at least for me, not disappointed as I kept reading through the series.
Yeah, in book three, I liked book three that it wasn't just another Caravelle game, you know?
Yes.
But it was still interesting enough in, you know, what was already set up from book one and book two to kind of hold its own. And have its whole own, like, plot arc and all the twists, you know?
I loved book three. Like, it almost felt like
perfect
book one and all the... No, book one and two were just, like, the background to book three. Like, book three was the story.
That's
what it felt like to me. And I really liked that she... It was like book one and book two were her practice runs, and then book three, she really nailed it. It was like, truly, that's how it felt.
It really is. You're right. Now that I'm thinking back on it. Okay, so I also finished it like last night. So I was like, I gotta finish. So it's still fresh. But you're right. Now that I'm thinking back on it, like, book three really hits everything you want in a book.
Yes.
You get the love triangle with Dante, Stella, and Jax, or Legend now.
But
it doesn't feel like stale. It feels like fresh, because now you get all this new stuff that you didn't know before. Like, Legend's weakness is love. And Tella, is Tella Jax really his one true love?
Yeah, you know? Right.
They're married? Like, what?
I know.
When I read that, I was like, what? Are you for real?
I know. For sure. And by the way, this is kind of like a side note, but I think I saw somewhere, I could be wrong, but I think I saw somewhere that she's writing another novel now from the point of view of Jax.
Remember? I was does Jax ring a bell?
Was it you?
Yeah.
Because there is another book.
Yeah, I was looking for, you know, I just checked Goodreads, like, what are the new releases and stuff. And this one book called Once Upon a Broken Heart had been getting a lot of buzz, and I'm like, wait, it's the same author as Caravelle. And then, like, I kind of just glimpsed the reviews. I don't want to read too much, but people were like, it's Jax, like, it's Jax's story. And then I was like, I think I had just finished book one, so I didn't know who Jax was, but you and Steph had started, so I was like, hey, like, does Jax ring a bell? And you're like, like, zippered lip, you know.
Okay, I remember now. Yeah. I hate it. No, I shouldn't say hate it, but whenever someone asks me about a book that we're reading, like, in our little chat, and, like, not everyone has finished it, I'm like, I'm not even going to say anything. Like, if you guys want to talk about it, you talk about it, but I am not participating in this discussion. I don't trust myself to accidentally not say something that you didn't know yet. So it's just like, not saying. But
I'm curious if it's like a series or if it's just a standalone. But
so it's out already, right?
That book is out. I think it just came out like the last month or two. You know.
Yeah. I really, really liked Finale, the last book. I liked how in the beginning of the book, of this last book, they say, I think it's, is it the girl's grandmother? Like, so they're saying, oh, like, someone used to say, or is it their mom? Someone used to say that every story has, like, a beginning, a middle, almost ending, and then the ending. Yeah. And then that's how this book was kind of broken up. The beginning, the middle, the end, almost ending, and
that
the ending.
That was cute. Yeah.
It was cute. And I don't know, like, just the quest, I guess, that the characters had to go on to, you know, find, I forget what they were supposed to do, like what the journey
they had a lot of different things, like they had a lot of like mini tasks that they had to do.
Yeah.
To ultimately...
But it was fun to read. It was fun to read for me because it was very linear, like this is what we need to do. And so, okay, we're going to do it. And then this is how we do it. Yeah. And like the ending of book three, I had the biggest book hangover after I finished because it was just, it was perfect. Like the way Julian and Scarlett's love story, like when she's finally like kind of learned to master her powers, even though she doesn't fully like take over. And then she's like, she's trying to save Julian because she, it's like so beautiful. She's trying to save Julian because she loves him. And then he can feel that she's taking away his love for her.
Yeah.
And he yells, "You said you would always choose me and you're not choosing me." And I was like, "That was so beautiful."
Okay. Real talk. That was the only time in this series where I felt like a pinprick in my eyes. I was like,
it was so good though.
It was the one. Yeah. The one part.
Okay. I felt it there. And then also felt it at the end when like the fates are defeated or whatever. And, Tella is leaving with Jax because she's like, I basically love Legend too much to take away his immortality. Like, I love him so much that I'm going to walk away from him.
Yeah.
And then he's leaving. And then Dante at that same time, like, is like, no, like, I love you enough to give it up. And then he's like running after her.
Yeah.
And she's like, go away. Like, go away. And then he's like, she's like, let me go. And he says, you're the one holding on to me. And she's gripping his shirt. Yeah. And I was like, like, those are the two parts that I was like, and then like the way she writes it, where he, I should have written it down, but he basically like I could see it like a movie unfolding in my mind's eye, the way he smiles at her and is like, you're worth it. And I like, and she's like railing against him, like, no, like you're going to lose your immortality and then you'll die if something happens to you, like, stop. And he's just like, you're worth it. And he's just like taking it and just smiling and looking at her with love and is like, you're worth it. You're worth it. Like,
I know.
And I was like, it was just the perfect ending. The perfect ending. So good. Yeah.
Everyone got their happy ending. It was.
Everyone got their happy ending. Good. I will have to say that, like, before reading the ending of book three, I was like, okay, you know, book one was a little soft, book two was better, and so far book three, okay, like, it's great, you know, this series feels fine, like, it's fine, it's not amazing, it's not terrible, it's fine. But when I finished book three, I was like, nope, I'm keeping this series, like, it is staying on my bookshelf because I just love the ending of
you
book
need
three
all
much.
Three together.
Yes.
But even though it wasn't, like, you know, spooky or haunted or any of those things, it does really feel appropriate for the season. Like, it has just magical elements. And it's something you would read, you know, in October. Yeah, it was such a good, timely pick. It was so good. And you said it was, like, pretty linear where you could kind of follow the adventure that they were on and what they're tasks to do, but at the same time I feel like there were enough surprises and twists with, like, the fallen star is Scarlet's father, like, they don't have the same father. Like, I was like, whoa, that is crazy. And she has powers, like, that was nuts. But I think that made Scarlet's storyline just, like, 10 times more exciting and interesting.
But that made me think too, in book one, I know that even in book one, it was like she could see or she could feel her own feelings and see her own feelings. And I always thought that it was just like a literary device that the author was using. Yeah. Like, I feel sad. Like, my feelings are like.
And I wonder if that was like purple. Part of it, you know, to kind of like let it blend in.
And yeah, it blended in.
It
but it was almost too. In book three. It was too blended in book one. Yeah. I was kind of. Like, wait, so she, because in book three, she tells the fallen star, like, I've always been able to see my own feelings in colors.
Yeah.
And then now I can kind of see other people's feelings in colors. And I, in that moment, I realized, oh, so she's actually seeing these colors. It's not just like the author saying like, oh, like, she sees, whatever.
Yeah.
So it was almost a little bit too subtle. I don't know that I would have done it like that, but I'm also not an author, so who am I to say? But
everything we're saying, we're like, yeah, we can't really do that either.
Yeah, yeah. So it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, but it was good.
It was so good. So overall, for me, the series is a page turner. Yeah,
page turner.
Altogether, yes. It is a page turner. Are we in agreement? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That wraps up our page turner or page burner segment. And to kind of wrap up the episode, the last segment that we will be doing on our podcast, which is kind of new, but I thought would be super fun, is we have a new corner and we are calling it Am I the Antagonist? It's AITA. If you are on TikTok, social media, or on Reddit at all, you'll kind of know what the AITA thread is. It doesn't stand for Am I the Antagonist? That's just what we're calling it, but it's Am I the A-hole? That's usually what it is. We are going to call it Am I the Antagonist for little ears that might be listening and also to follow our book theme. We found some Halloween or October themed AITA, Am I the Antagonist questions. And we're going to read one or two out loud on the podcast and kind of give our opinions and takes on it. There are some pretty crazy stories out there. I will say that I had my producer, AKA my husband, James, look up the stories for me.
Thank you, James.
Because I didn't want to be spoiled. Okay, let's start with, okay, here's the first one. I have not read this. I have not heard this. Like, I don't know, okay? Am I the antagonist for insisting that my husband wear a costume to a Halloween party? My husband, 37 years old, is not from the U.S. I, 35 years old, am. I get that Halloween is really an American thing and that it seems weird to him. We don't live in the U.S. and when we're not there, we totally ignore it. But we'll be visiting my family in late October and my sister, 38-year-old, whom we don't get to see very often, is planning a small Halloween party. Friends and family at her home. Not some big event. My husband isn't really into parties, which I respect. He doesn't have social anxiety or anything like that. He just doesn't really like parties. He doesn't mind attending my sister's party with me, especially since he understands that it would be impolite slash hurtful to her if he didn't. But it's definitely not something he's looking forward to. When I told him, however, that he'd have to wear some kind of costume, he said he really doesn't want to, that the idea makes him feel really uncomfortable. But I honestly think it would be rude to show up to a Halloween party without even attempting to wear a costume. I told him it doesn't have to be complicated or even very conspicuous. He can wear a suit and tie and say he's a lawyer or something like that. He just has to make enough of an effort so that my sister and the other guests doesn't feel like he's snubbing them. My husband and sister get along fine, but definitely aren't close. And while I truly don't believe my sister does think that he's a pretentious snob, I do think that the potential is there for such a thought to develop and that refusing to dress up for Halloween would push things significantly in that direction. Normally, if someone says that something makes them, quote, really uncomfortable, I would honor that, period. But in this case, I really don't think it will kill him to wear some half-assed costume. half put together outfit where I know it will hurt my sister's feelings if he doesn't make any effort at all. So am I the antagonist for insisting that my husband wear a costume to this Halloween party?
That's a good one.
That's a good one, James. Thanks for sending me that one. I'll go first.
Okay.
I'm going to say someone who's been married for 12 years, I think. So a while and has three kids. I'm going to say, no, you're not the antagonist. And here's my reasoning why. Because if you know your husband enough that you're like, it's not really something that he's uncomfortable with. Like, he doesn't have social anxiety or whatever. He's going to go to the party. It's just friends and family there. It's just him kind of being stubborn about it for no reason and saying, no, I don't want to, so I'm not going to. And she's like, put on a silly hat and just say that it's this. Or, like, you know, it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
It could put on a tracksuit and say you're going to Squid Games. Like, it doesn't have to be this elaborate thing. But, like, participate because it's my sister's Halloween party, right? I think that, like, if your wife is asking you to do that, I think he's the antagonist for not going along with it and for being insistent that he doesn't want to. That's my personal take on it, from what, like, information she's giving us. Like, I don't know if he has, like, some real valid, like, trauma reason why he doesn't want to wear a costume. It really just sounds like he doesn't want to wear one. That's how I feel. So I would say, no, you're not the antagonist. I think that she's been really accommodating and, like, you could just wear something, like, wear a t-shirt that has Cookie Monster on it and say you're
like, you know, it could just be so
get
easy.
Into the spirit. It could be so easy. So
I agree.
Feel like,
I think I agree with you. I think she's not being an antagonist, especially if you're going to, you're not hosting, right? You are going as guests to a party. And I guess I would maybe find out, like, are all the adults dressing up? Is it a costume party kind of thing? And if it is, then you kind of just have to go along with it. And, you know, I'm sure that there will be different levels in the, you know, some people are really into it. Some people are not. And it's okay. Right. You just have to participate, like you said. And I think, I guess it would be like, well, what, finding out why the husband doesn't want to participate. Like, is it because you don't have time to put together a costume or whatever? Right. Then it can, you know, then it can be maybe the wife saying, okay, I will just do it for you or whatever, you know, to make it as simple as possible. So that's what I would have done if it was me. But
just be like, okay, here, here's this hat. Just put this, just put this on. Okay. Cool. Oh boy. Okay.
This one feels spicy. The,
And we'll just end with this one. Like, we'll only do two. But am I the antagonist for getting annoyed with parents who drive their kids to affluent neighbors on Halloween? So, within the past year, my girlfriend moved in with me into my home in an affluent neighborhood. For the past few years, the neighbors and I have seen a growing amount of people come to our neighborhood for Halloween. This has caused a lot of people to, quote, turn off for Halloween, which I think means, like, when you turn your lights off and you're kind of like, I'm not here. Which you think would get the crowd to lessen, but it keeps growing. I was openly annoyed with this leading up to Halloween, and my girlfriend would condemn it every time I brought it up because, quote, Halloween's all about sharing. Is it though? saying it shouldn't matter whether the kids are from the neighborhood or not. She'd also point out that many of these children probably live in bad neighborhoods where it's not possible to trick or treat. Not surprisingly, this year, at both entrances to the neighborhood, cars line the streets, some with out-of-state plates. I live in a suburb of a city that is just over the state line. So, am I the antagonist for getting annoyed with parents who truck carloads full of kids to a neighborhood that they don't live in?
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I don't know, dude.
I already have an opinion on this. I don't know if it's the right one, but I'm going to say no. I mean, yes. I'm going to say yes, you are the antagonist. Like, I think that that's a stupid thing to be mad about. Like, I don't know. That's just my feeling on it. I feel like, why do you care if the kids who are coming to your door to trick or treat are from your neighborhood or not? Like, you're giving out candy regardless. Right?
And if it's maybe if it's like, oh, I have to buy like five times more candy now, whatever. But I mean, you don't have to, right? You can just buy the same amount of candy. And when you're out, you're out.
You're out. Exactly. Exactly. Like, why does it bother you so much? And I kind of agree, like, what this guy was saying about how his girlfriend made the point, like, these kids are probably coming from neighborhoods where it's not really safe for them to trick or treat. So they're going into this other neighborhood. And like, I don't know. I think you are the antagonist for feeling that way.
I agree with you.
Yeah, so I don't know if this would count as like a not my neighborhood kind of thing, but the street that we live on, my house is on, is on a really, really inclined hill. Like, it's very, like, think San Francisco type streets that are like really inclined, right? And so the 4 years that I've lived here, we have never trick-or-treated in like our block, like on our street, because it would just be a hike to like go up and then back down. And like, it's just, it's a lot. So we drive our kids to a different neighborhood. It's still in our town. It's just like a different part of our town, where it's completely flat. And like, I know the neighbors are into it because their houses are all super decorated with Halloween stuff. And we go there to trick or treat.
Yeah.
And we've done that for the past 4 years. And I know like it's not quite the same, because it sounds like this guy that's posting is saying like they're coming from like out of town or like from far away. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just kind of feel like you, as a parent, like you kind of just go where it's either fun and festive or it's safe, or you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like
this guy obviously doesn't have kids.
Yeah, no, for sure he doesn't have kids. It almost feels like complaining about people who would drive to your neighborhood to look at all of like the Christmas decorations or lights that are out on that.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that.
Like, why does it bother you? Like, you know, the lights are out anyway. Like, people can drive by and enjoy it, even if they're coming from far away. Same thing with candy. Yeah. Like, you're giving out candy anyway. Why do you care who you're giving it to? So I'm going to have to say, yeah, you're the antagonist for this one.
Yeah. I would have to agree with you. I mean, I am also like you, where we don't trick or treat on our street or block.
Yeah.
Because usually we like meet up with friends too. So like,
you know,
we go to a different neighborhood, usually our friend's neighborhood, and like trick or treat there. And I do agree, like with small kids, it's just easier to go to a neighborhood where you know, and I don't know, maybe the affluent neighborhood is, I don't know, it just feels safer. And so not necessarily that the neighborhood that we go to is like more affluent or whatever, but it does just feel like easier in some ways to walk around and go from house to house than ours. Because you know, our street, now that I think about it, there aren't too many decorated, so I don't even know how many would be available for trick-or-treating.
Right.
Yeah, I think people just go to neighborhoods where they know it's going to be, you know, festive, and there are going to be opportunities to trick-or-treat. So, yes, agree. You are the antagonist.
Yes. Verdict given. You are the antagonist. Fun. That was so fun. So we'll have one of these for every episode. Yeah, that follow kind of like the theme of that month's episode. So this is our new podcast format, guys. If you like it, make sure to give us a rating on, you know, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen, because that will help kind of spread our awareness to other people. And we mentioned this, I think, at the beginning of the episode, but we're getting ready to launch season 3 of the podcast next month, which is nutso. Like, I can't even, it's just, time has flown by. But to sort of celebrate that, we will be doing a giveaway next month in November. The details for that will probably be announced on our Instagram and or our website blog. So make sure that you're following us on our Instagram at Pen and Page Gals. And also make sure that you're following our website at penandpagegals.com. We have a subscription box on our website, and we've had it, but I think it wasn't working properly. And so we worked on it and fixed it, and it should be working just fine. So make sure that you enter your email there so that you'll be the first to get updates from us for things like this giveaway that's going to be coming up in November. We're super excited about this new format. I think it was a lot of fun to record, so I hope it's fun to listen to. We of course always welcome feedback, and then if you listened or if you read the book, pick with us for this month and have other thoughts, then feel free to message us on Instagram or comment on our blog, comment on our Instagram, you know, just like let us know what you're thinking. Yeah. And on that note, our book club pick for next month is going to be, drumroll, it will be The Heart Principle. Yes,
yeah.
By Helen Huang. And it is technically like a third book of a loose series, but I don't think it's not like Caraval where you have to have read the first couple books. Yeah. It's kind of like just, you know, the main character of book one is now a side character of book two is now a side character of book three, you know, so you can definitely not read the first two, but if you have time and want to, the first one is called The Kiss Quotient.
And you read those, Helen right? Hall.
Yeah, I read the first and the second. Okay. I really liked it because the main character for the first one, the girl, she's autistic and it reminded me of my daughter. And it's like trying to find love when she's super literal. So
I thought that was cute. Anyways, sweet.
We'll be reading The Heart Principle for November. If you miss us, between episodes, then you can check out Jensine at Jensane on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And you can check out me at Sophia K Says on Instagram. We're super pumped about season 3. We have lots of fun things coming up. And we can't wait to sort of continue with the things that have made us what we are to this day. And we're so thankful for all of you that have faithfully listened and supported us and just kind of watched us as we've, I don't know, grown and gained clarity on like what we want our brand to look like. Lots of fun stuff down the pipeline coming. Yep. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
See you next month.
Bye.